Okay, this hour we'll take your phone calls with Craig Hewlett as we talk about the Hydra of Carnage. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back with Craig Hewlett. Craig, what was it that gave you the instincts to see the things you've seen way before anybody else?
Oh, that's a tough one. I've studied a lot of philosophy, sociology, metaphysics. And, in fact, I used to say if you haven't at least dabbled a little bit and studied somewhat what are called the occult sciences, mm-hmm. you're never going to quite be able to grasp politics in this modern age. But I think what really happened to me is I became a really strong believer in praxeology, which is neither philosophy or psychology. It's the theory put forward by Ludwig von Mises that it's predictable that if A happens, you can predict that B will happen. And if A and B happen, you can go on and predict with absolute certainty that C will happen. But it requires that you be very Nietzschean about your beliefs, your convictions. You have to be prepared to throw them out in a heartbeat as soon as the evidence points you in the wrong direction.
You've also got a good knack, a good judge of people, and I think that's helped you too.
Well, you know, that's primarily what I do with my client base, is I help businesses, individuals, including people in the entertainment industry, with their businesses or careers, but primarily how to help them guide their way through the maze of nasty human nature that's out there. And a lot of people just... they're very naive, even though they're adults. They can be very bright in certain areas, but they're very naive about what other human beings are capable of in this world. And I think we're seeing this now.
Oh, no doubt. You know, I'd love to be able to trust everybody, but you can't do that.
No, and you know, people are already calling my office right now. Kathy stays up all morning when I do your show. So if you are calling, you know, Don't expect her to forward questions to me. You know, she's going to try to sell you the Hydra of Carnage or this new white paper we just published. But, you know, I'm not in a position to really help everybody. You know, it's a very complex world. I do this 24/7. You know what? I forgot to say one thing, and I don't want to forget this. Another document came out.
What was that?
Its title... it's from the Counterterrorism Center at West Point. It's Al-Qaeda's Foreign Fighters in Iraq, A First Look at the Sinjar Records. And this is also astonishing. And I have to read all of these boring documents to get this one piece of information. Over half of all the foreign fighters that are killing Americans in Iraq and Afghanistan are coming into that country, those countries, through Syria, by way of Libya, and over half of them are Saudis.
Is that something?
So, again, another piece of the puzzle. It's the Saudis that are killing Americans, funding the terrorism, and funding the entire war on terror that we're saying our entire homeland security and national security apparatus is fighting, in Bush's words, for generations to come. So, really, who's the enemy here?
You know, and if it wasn't for the Saudi oil... we probably wouldn't care, would we?
No. And obviously anybody that thinks that this isn't about oil and controlling the Tigris and the Euphrates rivers and encircling Iran and cutting them out of the oil picture, the pipeline picture, if you think these things aren't part of our political objective, then you're either delusional or stupid.
Yeah. Is the Al Saud family too entrenched in Saudi Arabia?
Oh, absolutely. The Saudi people could never get rid of them. But, you know, we have foot soldiers. We have our own U.S. military base in Saudi Arabia. And Blackwater just got a contract to train Saudi troops and also the Bahrain government's troops to see to it that their people don't join the Arab Spring. We're doing everything to protect
those countries,
those two countries, yeah. Saudi Arabia and Kuwait. We will do anything to protect them. And by the way, when I say George Bush, our best friends, I'm not saying this facetiously. Every time the Saudi family, when any of the princes, the head of Intel is a prince, the head of trade is a prince. If the king comes to America, they go to Houston first.
That's right.
Not the White House.
That's true. Let's go to Mark in Las Vegas. Get us started here, Mark. You're on Coast to Coast.
Hello, George and Craig.
Hi.
Of course the cocaine importing agency's planes keep crashing. How do you think they got their name?
Well, what do you mean, how do you think they got their name?
Our cocaine importing agency, the finest.
Okay.
All right, there you go. I didn't get that one.
Cocaine importing agency.
Oh, you know CIA. There it goes. A little slow, but I picked it up on the uptake.
By the way, drug deaths in the United States, according to last week's New York Times, Los Angeles Times, just reported that now drug deaths exceed traffic fatalities in America.
Isn't that something? And by the way, we've talked about this too. The war on drugs, never going to beat it. Never going to beat it. Why don't we just legalize it?
Look, there's no intention to win in Iraq or Afghanistan or the war on drugs. That's why we don't have what the government likes to call an exit strategy.
All we want to do is protect the pipeline and protect the Iraqi oil.
And we don't care how long it takes.
No, we don't. And we'll use our troops to do that. And, so some Iraqis will die, the poor people there. We don't care. We just want to protect the oil in the pipeline. You agree?
Yes, I agree. And half of all the Americans that enlist in the Marines and the Army are coming from foreign countries. So as long as the American people aren't dying to protect corporate interests or traffic in cocaine with the CIA or whatever it is we're talking about at hand, the American people, if we were drafting the youth of America, I think we'd have a whole different attitude about this.
How many people don't want to believe what you've been talking about tonight? How many people would love to say you're wrong?
Well, that's the problem. You could say I'm wrong, but you'll have to get this 300-page briefing paper and prove that I'm wrong. I don't ever say anything that I can't back up with at least three documents.
That's right. No, I know that, knowing you. I know that. Let's go to
Lust. Because I'm afraid of going to court.
Of course, you got to protect yourself.
Exactly. I don't do this in a cage or in a vacuum. There are people that would like to be able to take me to court and prove that I have made tremendous errors. But once they look at it and look at what I've said and what comes true the next week, you're going to lose if you take me to court.
Well, the bottom line is more stuff will come out in court.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if I had that kind of power?
Let's go to
subpoena data.
Christian in Los Angeles. Go ahead, Christian.
Hello, George. How you doing? How you guys doing this evening?
We are okay. Yeah. Thanks.
I just wanted to say that it's like what you're talking about. I'm 37. I'm a college student, just graduated. And it's amazing to me how stupid my generation is. Every time I've talked about in the past about the Bilderberg Group, you always get, and I've noticed this dumb look on a lot of young people's faces, and it's credible. So I think the Bilderberg Group should be extremely proud, because that was one of their tenets of achieving a one-world government, is that we're going to dumb down the youth. And I think they're doing that remarkably well. I've done a lot of research on Bilderberg. I've read Daniel Ulushian's book. I'm still in the process of reading.
Good guy. He's been on the show.
Yeah, and it's really sad. It's almost like in 2012, why should I bother voting? Because now it's like you can't trust any of the Republicans, or even, like it's sad, Barack Obama, to an extent, has sold out the country. He drank the Kool-Aid, in other words. Another thing I wanted to add on the show is that I'm also going to read Craig Unger's books, if you've heard of him. He did The House of Bush, The House of Saud, another book. And I'm also going to sink my teeth into Family of Secrets. And you interviewed that author recently on your show, Russ Baker.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to get the guest, his input with the 9/11 Truth Movement. I think on 9/11, I think the towers, and I think also Dr. Stephen Jones, he did a paper on this, a while back, and he's still doing research on it. The towers, I think, were blown up. And I think that's why there was just the evidence and everything was cleared away so quickly. So I want to get his input on that because, you know, it was like the collapse of Building 7, and that was such a giveaway.
Well, we've had a number of guests on the program, Craig, that have talked about either a controlled demolition or some kind of pulse machine that was able to just disintegrate these buildings. Look, we all know the planes hit them, but they did go down in a very quick, strange way.
Well, there's a number of explanations for it, and I don't think we're ever going to know all of the truth about it because I think there was a need on the part of the government to take the buildings down quickly for what I consider maybe a wrong-headed move from a law enforcement standpoint because it also then destroyed an enormous amount of evidence. But they were genuine, and I know this for a fact because I've involved as a consultant. Like I said, the first people I called on 9/11 were ATF agents that I was currently working with on a project. But the buildings were felt by a number of very powerful people that they had to come down for fear that they would topple. So it wouldn't surprise me that somebody either moved in explosives and brought those buildings down as quickly as possible.
I don't think they would have been able to move them in that day. That's
highly unlikely. But you know, I'm not an expert. The guys I've talked to are, but I do know this: they wanted the buildings to come down rather than fall over.
Right. Well, no, I agree with that. And you know, the Building 7 collapse is the baffling one. That was hit with just some debris, not a plane. And that thing went down the same way.
Well, as long as nobody will argue that there were no planes involved, I agree that there are a great number of questions unanswered. And I think our government has proven to date, as we're talking about tonight, has proven to date that we are going to continue to be lied to, not just about 9/11, but about absolutely everything that matters.
And people will take it.
And I don't know why. You know, I don't agree, by the way, that the American people are being dumbed down. I just don't believe that because, you know, I didn't go to Harvard. I went to public school. I refused to function.
Yeah, but how many people like you do research, hit the internet, you know, look at documents? I don't think a lot of people do that, Greg.
But not because of a lack of being not for lack of like being dumbed down. I went to school with a public school system, but you know I rejected any kind of formal education because I felt like they were being too bossy. I don't like being told what to do. So it wasn't that I couldn't do the work. I just didn't like being told to do the work. I felt like I was being drafted, which I then got drafted.
You never could have functioned in a corporate America world where you had to come in.
By God, I tried.
Did you?
I was in the corporate world for 14 years.
Carry a briefcase? I don't know. Let's go to William in Madison, Wisconsin, east of the Rockies. Well, William is gone, but we've got MG in Erie, Pennsylvania, first-time caller. Hello, MG.
Hi. Nice to talk to you.
You too.
I listen to your show every night.
Thank you, sir.
And enjoy it. But there's one thing that I have been noticing lately. You know, a lot of calls have been coming in that sort of, in a way, blame Muslims for a lot of things or insinuate that most Muslims are bad or in some way or the other.
Well, most Muslims are very good people, by the way.
And, you know, I'm not a very practicing Muslim by any means at all, but, you know, things like that will bother me a little bit.
No, I mean, they are, there's a group, MG, that are, they're very fanatical. They're very fanatical.
Oh, yes. I understand that.
And they're full of hate. But most of them are great people. Most of them.
That's why I left my country, you know.
What country did you leave?
I came from Pakistan.
Ah, okay.
Almost 21 years ago. There are other things that have been talked about, at least online I've seen, about Israel's involvement in 9/11. And in the beginning, the first couple of days, there were some news in the mainstream media even And then there was just a total blackout on those, and there's nothing that you hear about them anymore.
Well, do you remember that story, Craig?
Well, hold on a second, because I certainly cannot be lumped into that category. Some of my best friends, and this isn't one of those phrases, were anti-Qaddafi Libyans that were forced to live in Seattle, which is where my AO is, and they were some of the finest men I've ever met. And we're talking 30, 40 of them. And they became my printer, my bodyguards, they kept an eye on my wife's art gallery while I was doing these kinds of interviews, because I got a lot of threats during the first Persian Gulf. And the caller is correct. Israel wasn't involved in 9/11, but I will add this. If it turns out to be true, and all the evidence is clearly pointing to Saudi Arabia as behind 9/11, not bin Laden, but Saudi Arabia financing a jihadist group that planned and executed with the intelligence services of Saudi Arabia and maybe other nations with full knowledge, that I bloody well guarantee you Israel knew.
Well, they may have even told us.
They may have warned us.
Yep.
But I will say this, when it happened, there was film footage in Times Square of, I believe it was 11 Mossad agents dancing a little jig when the towers went down.
I've always heard that. Is that true?
It is true. They were a group of students posing as art dealers, and they were Mossad agents, and they were going through areas and cities like Georgetown to find out who lived in which home and get a layout of the home and get all the information they could on each person of government significance that was living in those homes. The FBI had been tracking them for weeks, and they caught up to them on 9/11, and they were dancing a little jig in the Times Square when they heard that 9/11 planes were hitting the towers. So, did they know? Well, it would be hard to believe that Israel's greatest enemy being Saudi Arabia, not Egypt, Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
It would be very hard for me to believe that Mossad would not know of Saudi Arabia's involvement of perpetrating 9/11.
And how did that passport of one of the hijackers just show up in the rubble of the World Trade Center?
I know. Some of this is just...
It's bizarre.
It's completely inconceivable. And, I don't know how far... does it really surprise you, George, that it took a law firm that represents the insurers
to get this information out?
Almost all of this. We've got more information now than we've ever had about 9/11.
Do you remember, and this is the day when we didn't have technology, that when Kennedy got killed, there was a newspaper in Europe that had Oswald is the suspect before they even knew it was Oswald.
Yes.
Remember that?
Yes. In fact, the gentleman that put that out was a good friend of mine.
All right, stay with us, Craig. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with you right here on Coast to Coast AM. His book, The Hydra of Carnage, and his website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Those of you in California, British Columbia, and Canada, St. Louis, Erie, Pennsylvania, stay with us. I'll get to you when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, we're going to talk about the curse of the Men in Black with Timothy Green Beckley. So get ready for that. And when we come back with Craig Hewlett, we'll take final phone calls here on Coast to Coast AM. Craig, it appears to one of the keys to this investigation of 9/11, these 142 Saudis, 24 members of the bin Laden family that were allowed to leave the country a few days after 9/11. How did we even know where they were to pick them all up? Unless they knew in advance.
Well, interesting enough, some of them, they were being monitored as foreign nationals with ties to, guess who? The entity called later Al-Qaeda.
Yep.
They were actually being tracked by the FBI, by our intelligence services, and by law enforcement. Let me be really clear about something. I don't like conspiracy theorists. They have done nothing but cause me grief my entire 30 years of work. But what we're talking about tonight is conspiracy fact. These are legal documents. Every time when I'm talking about the CIA flights, I'm quoting FAA records where those flights were a CIA contract flight that went from Guantanamo Bay to New York on June 23rd, July 14th, back to Guantanamo Bay on January 21st. It crashed on the 24th. It was downed by helicopters in Mexico, and it was carrying cocaine, and it just left from Guantanamo Bay.
See, what some of these conspiracy theorists, though, I think what they do is they are right in the middle of all of this. Before the documents flow, they hear things like, hey, some Saudis were picked up right after 9/11 and flown out of the country. Nothing to back it up. No evidence at that time. But they pick up on it and they run with it. And I bet most of them have been pretty right on. What do you think?
Well, you know, there's a between conspiracy theorist and conspiracy fact, there's the gray area.
There is that gray area.
And that's the area that, you know, I would recommend if you want to learn how to do research and you don't really have the skill sets, you know, take a course in critical thinking, because the key to understanding, and it'll always be the same, doesn't matter where you start your research from, but when you start running into things and the facts don't fit, you have to be exactly like a cop. You got to throw those facts out until the right facts fit. When they don't fit, your theory's wrong.
How do we know those 142 Saudis that left the country, that some of them, maybe even most of them, were part of 9/11?
Well, we know they were now because now the FBI withheld the documents from Bob Graham's subcommittee, which is what he's complaining about now. Now we know the FBI knew at the time that some of those terrorists had visited those Saudis' homes. There was one gated community.
Sarasota, Florida.
They got the guy's license plate, and they know for a fact it was Muhammad Atta that visited this Saudi family.
And the Saudi family took off a few days before 9/11.
2 weeks before 9/11.
Yeah. Urgent. Just gone. They left everything.
And I'll repeat, when you add this, these details that have come out to the lawsuit, you compare the notes of all of them, which is what I've done. I've compiled all these documents into one briefing paper that's 300 pages. When you read all of it, you will realize that the Saudis have been behind all of this for 20 years.
That's
and
nice.
Our FBI withheld it from Bob Graham's 9/11 commission. And then Bob Graham was chastised for doing a poor job.
Unbelievable. All right, to the calls we go. Final calls, George in Hesperia, California. Hey, George, go ahead.
Yeah, George, I wanted to say this is a great show. This information you guys are putting out just saves me, you know, the U.S. Resident, the problem of doing the research myself. And my question to Craig is with all the facts that we do have now, isn't there any possibility of bringing some type of charges against the players in these conspiracies?
You mean criminal charges?
Yes, criminal charges. I mean, we the people are mad enough now where we want some accountability.
But we would have to start with the man who started the cover-up, and that would be George Bush Jr.
Okay, and if that's the case, who do we go to actually we the people versus George Bush Jr.? How do we do this?
Okay, well, now you're getting into an area where I have to put on my cynic's cap. I realize to become a cynic, it's an act of will. So I'm not really a cynic, or I wouldn't be doing this for 30 years. But I'll have to tell you, nobody's got guts enough to go after George Bush Jr. Nobody in the Justice Department, nobody in our government, the Senate and the House combined, 535 cowards.
They want it to go away, don't they?
They want me to go away.
They attack you?
I used to be a regular on the Jim Bohannon Show live in Washington, D.C. at 7 o'clock in the evening every single month for a decade.
Good old Jimbo.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Did they get the Jim?
Of course.
Next up, we go to Claudia in British Columbia, Canada. Claudia, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
Oh, and my blood pressure just goes through the roof.
Take a pill.
Start talking about the Saudis. I'm going to add a quick point to your discussion, and then I'm going to get to my question for Craig. And by the way, you guys are awesome, Craig, you and George. Most people don't know this, but that Salafist Wahhabi regime in Saudi Arabia has wiped out an incredible number of the Islamic heritage sites, especially around Mecca and Medina. That's the cradle of Islam. They have desecrated the graves of the Prophet Muhammad's mother, his father, most of the relatives. They've wiped out the mosques. They've done all that. So, I mean, nothing that you have to say about the Saudis, as far as them being evil, would surprise me at all.
Now, they're also number one and number two on the list for Amnesty International as two of the most vicious, violent regimes of torture, trafficking young girls. Make a list.
Absolutely. I mean, I found out a lot of this when I was on the Israeli forum, Haaretz, which is one of the largest English-speaking forums in the world. And I mean, there was everybody was on there. There was the Arabs on there, the Israelis. That was right after the Lebanon War. But I mean, those Saudis. So anyway, my question, Craig, for you is this. When you were saying follow the money, if people take a look at the price of oil before 9/11, which was, you know, $20, $30 a barrel, even down to $10, and if you, then it almost went up to $150, and it's still up there, nowhere near those levels, but still, it's massively inflated from that time. So it's very easy to see that the Saudis profited from just the price of oil alone, let alone the futures market, which I think is where the real action's at. But I'm also thinking that one of the other major countries that would have profited from this is Russia. I mean, they are huge oil producers. And do you think that there are black elements within the Russian government that would have got along, you know, got together with the Saudis there, knowing that the Saudis themselves, like you said, they're Machiavellian, they don't like to show their dirty hands, they like to get together with...
Well, I've never heard of any Russian involvement in this, Craig. Have you?
No. And to be honest with you, I think Russia is so badly on the ropes right now. Their economy is in shambles. The ruble is worthless. They can't seem to get anybody to run the country that's not ex-KGB. And basically, while they've got tremendous oil reserves, the West is not advancing the technology to do the exploration. So the Russians really aren't major players. In fact, they're importing. They're importing oil.
If there was a new committee to investigate either Saudi Arabia or open it all up, and they asked you to testify, asked you voluntarily, would you go?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't ask me.
Well, maybe a new one would, wouldn't they?
No.
You don't think they want to get... See, I don't think they'll even have committees.
No, I don't think they would. But, you know, even if they do, they're not going to allow somebody like me to be, even though, you know, I was a special assistant to a congressman, and I'm in the computer as a consultant to three different federal law enforcement agencies, the first thing they would do is they would talk to the top intel guys that have worked with me on and off with these different agencies, including one guy from Secret Service, and they're gonna tell them the truth. You're not going to tell Hewlett what to say.
That's good. Let's go to Ludi, truck driving in Virginia. You're up with us on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Ludi.
Hey, thanks a lot, George.
Sure thing.
Joined the show tonight. Full disclosure right off the bat, I would call myself a right winger, but I'm no fan of George Bush. Two quick questions. President Cheney, why would they lie about WMDs going into Iraq knowing full well they weren't there? And then the next question would be, why would they stop lying? Seems like it would be real easy to plant it.
Plant the weapons? Or why would they haven't stopped lying?
No, they haven't stopped.
They've never come clean and said, well, we knew that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Now, why would they lie and say they were when they knew there wasn't? That was to get the gullible American people to believe that Iraq was somehow involved in 9/11, and we had to go in there and take them out. There was
sure,
no reason to take Iraq down.
But my question would be, if they lied saying there were WMDs in Iraq, why would they stop lying? In other words, why wouldn't they say, hey, look, we found some WMDs?
Well, because they didn't.
They could easily plant them.
Well, because they couldn't get everybody in the military to lie.
Yeah, somebody would say, no, they made that up. I was at the meeting, and it's not true. And then the house of cards would begin to collapse.
No, there's no reason for them to come clean now because, by and large, look, let's just be honest. And, George, I'm not doing this. I don't do these kinds of things. I don't kiss anybody's rear. But if there's guys like George Nuri out there doing what he's doing, it's going to be really hard to keep lies going. But the bottom line is, the truth is, as admirable as it is, what George does, and whatever you think of what I do, it doesn't matter. The rest of the American people are watching American Idol, and the Super Bowl is more important.
Yeah, that's true. East Hollywood, California, first-time caller. Scotty, go ahead.
Hey, the guest mentioned a few times tonight cocaine coming from the Middle East, but cocaine isn't grown in the Middle East. It's a different drug completely, made from a different drug or a different plant than heroin. So I was wondering.
It was grown in the Middle East. We're just saying that cocaine was found on the CIA flights that were running out of Guantanamo Bay to the Middle East and Europe, and that they were return flights with cocaine on those flights.
We talked about the poppy heroin.
Then we talked separately about Afghanistan and the poppies. Two different things.
There you go, Scott. Let's go next. Fargo, North Dakota. Robert, take it away. Go ahead, Robert.
Hi, George. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I want to be very clear, and I think everyone needs to listen very carefully. George, I'm concerned about the safety of your guest because he is so correct in everything that he's saying about the Saudis. And, sir, I'm going to go ahead and say something that I believe you already know but you don't want to say. And I can tie all this together with the unrest in the Middle East surrounding Israel, all of this. That, you know, it's deeper than oil. It's deeper than money because the Saudis have all, you know, the oil and all the money. It goes to the one world government. And I truly, honestly believe the so-called Antichrist is going to come from Saudi Arabia with a mark of the beast. The cashless society, this is what this is leading to, too. The mark, it's all about power and control over the population of the world. All these positionings of everybody, all these governments and everything, it's all like a chess game, and they're getting ready to make checkmate. And without the mark of the beast, you will not be able to buy or sell. And I truly believe that the Antichrist, the leader of the one world government, is going to come from Saudi Arabia. And I'm really concerned for your safety, sir.
Well, Craig, I think you are well aware of your own possible dangers, aren't you?
Let me put it this way. The guys I've worked with 30 years, they told me probably 2 years ago when we were having some problems out here on our property and people were driving by shooting off guns 27 times, actually. And they shot my dog. But when I talked to them as this thing was developing, one of the heads of Intel finally came clean and said that they never told me, but they had stopped many, many, many attempts on my life.
Mm.
But their network is so pristine, nobody ever got close. And they decided not to tell me because, well, they have their reasons.
Do you electronically start your car from afar or what?
No, I'm just a real strong believer in the Second Amendment.
I understand. Bronx, New York. John, it's your turn. Go ahead.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good.
Hi, Craig. Yeah, I wanted to ask you, could it be that hijacker's passport found near the World Trade Center was planted there after the fact? And why or who would have a motive for doing so? And also, what would stop the International Criminal Court from investigating 9/11?
Well, one of the things, I'll answer that, Craig. Of course, it could have been planted after the fact. I think it was. So do you. And one of the reasons for that is you get a passport of a guy from the Middle East. All of a sudden, you've ID'd one of them, and it's big news. Go ahead, Craig.
Well, the International Criminal Court, America is not even a signatory. So, you know, they have no power. It's everybody would have to agree to give them the power to prosecute. And America, Israel and a couple of other countries have simply said, we're not going to go along with this. But the other thing is you know, it's not a new world order the way everybody's got it in their head. I'm aware that the language is out there. A lot of sophisticated arguments are made with that's the title of the book. But the system we're talking about isn't a one-world government like a seated government. It's an acephalous organ. It's built like a web, a spider web, where all these different governing institutions worldwide, primarily created by the United States, like the IMF, the World Bank, NATO, all these different institutions are all headquartered in different areas of the world, and those are ultimately the governing bodies of the world order. Now, that already exists. There's no conspiracy to make it happen.
And it always did exist.
It started at the turn of the century, 1913, and what I didn't get to follow up on is they've already decided what the currency is going to be named if they ever get to the point where we have a World Federal Reserve Bank. They've already given it a name, whether it stands, B-A-N-C-O-R, Bancor. It's best based on the special drawing rights of the IMF.
And you're absolutely, Craig, we're out of time. I want to thank you once again, and just take care of yourself, will you?
Always.
All right, Craig Hewlett, his book, The Hydra of Carnage. And again, as usual, his website is at coasttocoastam.com. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Will Wilkerson, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, George Knapp, Ian Punnett, and Art Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.